Situation. Not because there's an emotion of goodness. It's a rational thing. What's fervor situation for what?
What's the rationale?
Because the most, in other words, if you made a creation, right? Now the most perfect creation is that which functions the best, right?
Yeah, but it could be.
So therefore, you must say that this is the best possible way that you could have been made, right?
Right.
Rationality dictates.
Yeah, but if you look at it on a whole, I mean, it could be that he created one man to do harm to himself. Not so long.
Right.
And if you're looking at the world on the whole, to make the most perfect world,
right.
Could be that certain people created not for their benefit. And,
no, that's a separate question. That's a separate question. That's not a question. And can God create an exceptional creature?
I mean,
or else for
the whole world to be. In other words, the world has to have these type of.
Yeah, but Hashem is laid power. Yeah. But that's an interesting question. That's under this separate question. Take it up in a minute. Yeah, that's an answer to this, though. In other words, to say God's goodness comes from a different source than human goodness.
I understand, it's rational.
And what is the source? The source is rationality. In other words, when he created the world, he created it in the most perfect possible way, right? So therefore, the most perfect possible way is that you should be able, that man should be able to live as good as possible, right?
Right.
And that's what we call God's goodness. It's really God's rationality. You understand what I mean?
I understand what you're saying about his rationality.
Because Bernie asked a question, he said, Bernie, the other way. Why do we have to say that he was pushing it?
Because he made him indifferent.
Maybe he's indifferent, right. Yeah, we say he's indifferent. That's what we say. We say God is indifferent. He just creates for reason. That's all. In other words, the whole essence of his creation is reason. He's indifferent. He doesn't care one way or the other. You're right.
When
you speak in terms of emotions, he doesn't care one way or the other, good or bad. When you speak in terms of intellect, in terms of perfection, there cares. Well, let's put it, I use the word cares. It's just a bad term to use for the God, but he's using it right, as we understand it. Yeah, there cares. Okay. First Chelek. He says he explains it again and again. Of course, so a lot of people went astray because of that. And when it says God has mercy, so all it means is a way to convey to the. You have to realize the Torah was written on two levels. Was written for the average. The Torah is an amazing sefer because the average person can gain something out of it. You know what I mean? And also the biggest genius can gain something out of it. Different levels, right on different levels. You understand what I mean? So the plain shot in the pasuk when a guy reads Vayomar Shemal Avram, of course to him the plain guy has one idea. And the Rambam has another way, so he understands a little bit more. I mean, but the plain person, the thing in common is that there's a communication between God and Avram. But what that communication is, one guy has a totally different idea of what it is than what it really is. You understand? Right. What? The way God I'm just giving you an example. The way God relates to man. Now, to understand this relationship, what it means. So one person thinks a relationship like one person to another person. Okay? Well, really, if you understand the philosophy, it's a different type of thing altogether. So it's an intellectual communication. Right? Now, the Pasuk, however, is written by Lashem and Adam. It's written in a way that everybody can understand. That's what it means, Dibbutar Lashem and Adam. But it doesn't mean that that's literally that God has a promise.
Sorry.
Get back
to your question.
That's wrong. Explain this in the first that we use can apply over there, right?
It's
an area completely. In other words, you maintain that the man can never comprehend Hashem HaKad. Who asked the question, right? He gave an answer, and he gave an answer. Right? Brain dead. Okay. Now, is there a difference between two answers?
Oh, yeah.
I
want you to hear, you know?
Rationally, it doesn't make sense. Right? Therefore, it's ambiguous to the self. So.
Yeah, but here's the question, what about the Rambam with the
watchmaker?
With the watchmaker, and the watchmaker, yeah.
In the watchmaker?
Yeah.
Oh, because there it's a lot of contradiction. The possibility which he assumes is in a contradiction.
How do you define it? I'm using polemics. You know what I mean? It's about polemics, arguments, sorry. So, but I want to, I mean, I think we should use polemics here. Because polemics is like, oratory. In other words, did you prove your point, or did he agree? Says, yeah, I see the point. Could you define the point clearly? Let me have a definition, definitively. with his argument.
And well, this was a question again.
Right. Refresh the question, right?
Between Kiss the Watchmaker and this. Right?
They gave him an answer. So he says he agrees. And the key word there was contradiction, right? Was that a thing to assume? There's no contradiction. And I want the faraway science. The faraway science. Faraway science. In other words, there's no comparison simply because the case of the watchmaker is an application of logic. What the Rambam is showing you is that you haven't applied logic properly.
There's no possibility.
What?
There's no possibility.
But he's not arguing, in other words, he's arguing with logic. With, he's showing you you're making a logical mistake. It's like a guy showing you geometry making a mistake. You see?
You want to say there's other rules of logic?
Yeah, right.
So you want to say there's other rules of logic?
That's right.
No, it doesn't answer the question.
The difference in his question is no question to begin with. Why? Because he's bringing a raya from one case that has no shaykh, that's the exact opposite. Because over there, what is the Rambam doing? The Rambam is using logic and he's showing you, according to rules of logic, you have an oversight. You're making a mistake. In other words, you're trying to draw laws with reason from cases that have, there are no, that he's misinterpreting. But his question is that the whole rules of logic are crazy. Just bring the rack of cases. In other words, comparing the cases, no shepherds.
Okay.
One is application. The Rambam is application. The Rambam says you're making a wrong application. Right. But he's not questioning the discerning factor.
Right.
He's questioning the discerning factor.
Right? Yeah.
Right? That's your argument, basically. Oh, so you say your argument is this. That's why he said in this case it's a contradiction, in that case no contradiction. What does that mean? In other words, contradiction means it's against the laws of reason, but there is no contradiction. See, I'm taking out of the term contradiction, bringing it to the philosophical terms. You know what I mean?
Right. In other words, he's asking a question from a case that's not that the case is a question. He's trying to question logic.
The Rambam is using logic to show you that this is the case.
But in his question, he's really using what he says against.
That's right. He's used
taking from a wrong case and playing like it. But really, but so.
Let's start off like this. Double flush and ask the question. So, yes. He says, how could you say. What was the first question, by the way? The first question was what? Who was the first one? No, the first question was
first question was
this morning. First question was, how do you get 5 months on with mashrach, right? So the first question was, how do you know that God wants what's best for us? That was the first question. What's best for us? Right? So, somebody answered. Who answered that question? I think it was, Howie, right? How do you know God wants what's best for us? Right? So the
answer was, how do you know God isn't me? How do you know God isn't me? Give me
somebody off.
I'm over here.
Okay. How do you know that God wants what's best? So the answer was that maybe he's mean. So he said meanness comes from an emotion. And we say that God does not have an emotion, either for good or for bad. But good is a result of rational. Good is not a result of emotion. Whereas bad, evil is a result of an emotion. Evil is a result of an emotion, not a result of rational. You understand? Okay. Then the question was, how do we know? Then the fleshman said, how do we know that God doesn't have emotions? Maybe he has emotions, and therefore he could have an emotion for evil. Right? So we said, no, if he had emotions, then he would be, then this would involve plurality. Right? God is more than one, because there's him and his emotions.
What would
compound. So it means that he's more than one essence.
What? Why would it
be? If you say that God has emotions, right? Like, let's say, for instance, take a person. A person has his intellect, his mind, and his emotions, right? That means that there are two parts to him. There's plurality. But God is only one. God is one single essence. There's no two parts to God. Now the question, of course, is why then Reuven? Right. Now the Reuven, right? He only has one. Now, so the question was, if he only has one, maybe it's all emotion, maybe it's not intellect, right? So we answered that by saying this: you could see from the from God's actions. Maybe it's just emotions, and how come everything is rational? right?
But how does it
happen? No, everything works in order. Everything works in law and order. In other words, everything in the world works on the basis of principles. Of rational principles. The whole universe works on the basis of principles.
What about rational? Tell me a rational principle.
In other words, the fact that the world, let's say for instance, there's a system over here in the world, right? It's not just a haphazard thing, there's a whole system of the universe, right? And when you study science, you understand what the basic principle of the system is and how it works, right? Now, obviously, the system, you understand with your mind, right? So in other words, it operates on principles which are intelligent, right? So therefore, we say, since that is so he must be rational, right? Okay, then he really Spiegel asked another question. But that question we'll go into later, but we don't take one question now. His question was, so maybe God is a compound. That's another question. That's all it was. What? That's plurality. He's saying it. Right, that's plurality. Yeah, his question is, in other words, okay, Torah says Hashem Echad, right? But how do we know? Let's understand it. It's a problem. We're supposed to understand this, right? I know, maybe he's really a compound. We have to know the proof that he's saying.
He doesn't have emotion.
Right, but he's saying maybe he's a compound, right? In other words, he's going down the line. Next premise. We're going down until we get to the first premise.
Maybe there's a different definition of oneness. Oh, 1 second, no.
Now, flesh to come up, we came with another question. We'll leave Spiegel's question out. And his question also was another question aside. Next question was Spiegel's question. Next question was Dave Flesh's question. His question was maybe. How do we know that this rationality, we're using rationality, we're using rationality to show that God is one. Because it can't be a compound because it's not two, right? That's a premise, right? Okay. So, and two and one, we know from the physical world, right? All these ideas that we have. Now, how do you know this applies to God? God is different than the physical world. Right? And as a proof, we brought the case of the Rambam, because the Rambam knocks down David Hume's...
We have to bring all the proof that this is proof with our physical thing, and
that's right.
So maybe
yes,
one of all these things are physical things.
Right. Now, to support his question, he brought a proof. It's just because the Rambam says that you can't say that the proof of God is from the fact that there's order in the universe, there's order in the world. Why? Because that doesn't mean there was a creator. Why? Because it's true, in order to make a coat, there has to be a creator. But for the given order, it doesn't have to be a creator. Maybe that order was always there. So you're trying to say that since the coat, I wouldn't say the coat is always there, so I wouldn't say the world is always there. No, that's no question. There's no analogy. Because by the coat, I wouldn't say the coat is always there, because in order to make a coat, you have to change the given order. But that doesn't mean that the given order itself could never always be there. Right? That's right. So therefore, Fleshner used that as a proof to show that you can't equate God with the universe. The God is a story, just like what we have to say is a story.
Oh, because you can't say that the order of what Hashem's doing was already there.
Right, because just like the Rambam says in this case. But there's no analogy at all. Don't try to understand the analogy. There's no analogy. Why? Because what the Rambam is doing is the Rambam is showing you with reason another possibility. But Fleshner is trying to say there's no reason altogether. You see, he's bringing a case as a proof. He's bringing a case which uses reason, which is impossible. You see? Now Howie said, okay, so Dave answered Fleshner's question. He answered this question, he said, very simply, that it proved to him that there's no analogy between these two cases. You bring a proof in a case which is exactly the opposite. But Howie says, but still there's two parts to Dave's question. One part is the analogy, which has been refuted, but we don't have to refute Dave's entire question, right? Therefore, we can still retrieve one part of the question, namely
that
physically
one could equal two.
That physically, maybe in God is a different world altogether, and we can't use our understanding of relationship to God.
What the Rubin question is?
Right. No. That's another question. Nope. That's another question. His question is two different questions. His question is maybe he's a compound is operating with the laws of reason. Your question is you can't even talk about questions like that. So your question is you can't even ask questions like that because there's no reason relation to God. See? Two different questions. How do we know that reason applies to God? Okay, so Bernie gave an answer. Now Bernie's answer was totally different, a different approach than Dave's. Completely different answer. Why? Because Bernie's answer, you need one question before. In other words, Bernie really should have asked Fleshner one question. Are you asking with the authority of Torah, or are you asking without the authority of Torah? Or without, when we say without the authority of Torah, not only does it necessarily mean we negate Torah, but we mean, can we understand it? Right? Okay.
What do you mean, can we understand it?
Bernie's answer to this, are you asking with the authority of Torah or not? So naturally Dave was asking with the authority of Torah, so he lost the question. And then Bernie moves right in. Bernie says, but it says the Torah, Hashem Achad. Now there's one or two possibilities. Either God thinks you can understand them, or either he thinks you can't understand them. Now he thinks you can't understand, so why did he tell you this? Elmai must say he thinks he can understand them. So you see, therefore, the rules of logic that apply to man apply to God. Okay, by virtue of God's action of the Torah. Right? Okay. Right. Good, huh? What? Let's say we didn't know this fact. What about the general argument? The argument, in other words, can we, without the authority of Torah, can we show that the rules of rationality, that we see from the Torah that it's true, that the rules of rationality, which apply to the, which we think with, we can apply to God in a certain way? Because it says Hashem Echad, right? Okay. But let's say without the authority of Torah. Without the authority of Torah. Can we prove, is the argument a good one, except we say, well, look, we have on the basis of tradition, we know the Torah is true, therefore we say it's not a good argument. But can we see inherently that the argument is not good, or do we have to resort to tradition? That's what the question boils down to. Now, tradition is without the Torah itself. Inherently the argument itself. See? In other words, what I mean is like this. And it doesn't boil down to a question of do we accept Torah or do we not accept Torah. Because we should accept Torah, so we know the fact is true, but still we don't know why the fact is true. In other words, if you could show me, this is what the Rambam says, that true knowledge is showing through, demonstrating through reason what the Torah tells us about the way of tradition. Now, through reason means without the Torah. But the Torah gives you the fact, the Torah gives you the result. But if you understand it well, you don't need the result anymore. The result is just a guiding thing. The Torah gives you, God gave you all the results at Sinai. Now you know the results. Now you have to work on the proofs. Now if you come with a proof, you know the proof is wrong if you see that the doesn't know the result. But still, you don't understand the proof. You just think of the results, you don't understand the proof. So therefore, can we understand the proof? In other words, can we understand why it is so that our knowledge relates to God as well? That's what the question boils down to now. That's Howie's question. Okay? That's where we're at now. We know that apparently that man can apply his reason in some way to God in reference to the problem of Hashem Echad, right? In reference to the problem of Hashem Echad, man can understand it. Man can understand it, right? Okay. So we know that from the Torah, right? Okay. Now that we know that from the Torah, but the question is, let's say without the Torah, could you know it? Right? Now without the Torah, it doesn't mean, so let's be looking. We have the Torah. We know the Torah is true, so why do we have to know without the Torah, right? That would be a good question. What's the answer? The answer is without the Torah means that you understand, not without the Torah means that you're not accepting the Torah. It means you want to know the proof which is used to cause the result that's in the Torah. You understand what I mean? When we say without the Torah, we don't mean assuming the Torah is false, because we have proven the Torah is true. So once we know the Torah is true, so you'll say, so what good is it to go to such type of speculation? Just idle speculation, right? There are more important problems. The answer is it's not idle speculation. Why? Because the Torah gives you the result. But true knowledge is understanding the result. So when we say without the Torah, we have to translate. Without the Torah means, can we understand the proof of the Torah? God? Is that a necessity?
Burning, yes.
Well, obviously yes, right?
Right.
Now can we prove that without that fact given to us by God? Can we understand that without the
Torah? So therefore you're denying Torah. I don't understand what you're saying.
Not denying Torah. We're saying, can we understand why it has to be that way? The Torah just tells you the fact that it is that way. Right? Now can we understand, can we understand why it has to be that way? Or we just have to accept it as a fact? You know what I mean? Now if the argument, for instance, if we could prove that man's reason must apply in relationship to God, we could prove it, right? So then we would understand why the Torah said, why God can give you this commandment of Hashem Echad. Otherwise, you just say, look, God knows best, and you get it up. So therefore, Bernie's answer is really incomplete. It's a good answer. It's a good answer, but it doesn't really answer the problem fully. It only answers one step. He's proven to you the result. But now the question is, can we get to the proof? You see, therefore, there were two different approaches. Dave was approaching it from the philosophical, meaning in terms of true understanding. But his answer only related to one half of the question. The other half was his. But now we go back, now we need Dave's approach in relationship to that second question. Okay, do you see it? All right. Now we know that our knowledge applies, that we could use our knowledge to understand something, to understand things about God. philosophy was David Hume. What was the big thing? He questioned causality, right? Now this philosophy is the exact same question as Hume's, exact same thing. Because all you see is that simultaneously with the pen, that doesn't mean that's the cause, that's exactly the argument. It's amazing that nobody picked it up. I mean, that is Hume's argument, except Hume doesn't use a religious thing, he just says it doesn't with anything. But it's the exact same argument as Hume. No difference in that in Hume's argument.
So that argument takes
that's an interesting thing.
It's an argument.
Religious argument. And a lot of religion, a lot of religious philosophers are going to believe it. This is so. There are, of course, this concludes our idea when you put it on the words. That's a crazy argument. That there is a denial of reason. And yet, in empirical means, this is real knowledge. Why? Because it's seen by the senses. That's empirical. No, of course. But empirical itself, all what are you using to understand the empirical? You're using reason, which is not empirical, so therefore the whole thing is ridiculous.
Really?
You know what I mean? Physical. What's the physical using the rational, the abstract? And the abstract is not physical, so therefore you're using non physical already, right? So why should you stop when you come to God? Alright?
I'll tell you what.
Tell me why.
Craig is according to our logic, maybe our logic is wrong.
Oh, maybe it's crazy. How come the physical world always works out that way?
Huh?
How come the physical world always works out that way?
Because we're accepting our logic, we're saying maybe we can't accept our logic.
Alright, I have a question like this now. Alright. Question now I have a turn. When we use logic in the physical world, right? So the question is, how do we know logic is correct? So the answer is, because we see from the senses, that's correct. It explains it, right? Ah, so his question is, but maybe really, what?
This is the
Einstein thing, right? No, maybe really, yes. Yeah, so it only explains the physical, right? Now, since it only explains the physical, so how can you use it in the area of non-physical? Right?
It explains it non-physically.
Right?
Okay.
That's the question. All right, so therefore, his question will come back again. In other words, and we're refuting his answer. His answer was, he said that why should you stop over there? So I'll tell you why we should stop over there. Very simple reason. Why? Because what's the reason that, how do we know the reason works over there? Because we see it from the physical, right? So therefore, from the physical corroborates that our reason is correct, right? But only in the physical, right? Only physical, we don't have the corroboration in the non-physical, so that's why non-physical we shouldn't use it. That's what's the answer. But the next time we start, they should give.
Nucleus.
But we're saying that justice is whatever the government says. In other words, when the government says, you have an idea that's right. In other words, if you're raised in a society where there's serfs and what do you call those guys? The other guys?
Nobles.
So you'll think that's just. I think it's just the guy born in the serf. He's a serf. Nothing unjust about that, because that's what the government decides. Then injustice would be to violate that plan. Right? Then the question is there a real justice? Or is it just arbitrary? Right? Whatever Shai makes up, that's justice. Right? So we said there is a real justice. Right? Why? Because so what is the objective of these rules? The objective of these rules is to
carry out the function of society.
To help a society function. Now society has to have one reality. There must be one reality to center society, right? So it says those rules which are in line with that reality, which makes society function to the best of its ability, are defined as justice. Because those are good rules. You understand me? In other words, let's say, for instance, forget about society, take a human being. Does a human being have a psychological reality? So then those rules which will make him function best, those rules have objective reality because they're in line with objective reality. Whereas just arbitrary rules that somebody might make up because somebody wants a son to be a boy. So therefore it makes up all kinds of ideas about it. But that's not really my reality, that's his own whim. That's not
what
it was.
What do you mean objective reality?
In other words, there is a reality concerning society, right? If you really had the knowledge, you'd know what the best way society, what the best set of rules
for the laws of nature.
For the laws of nature, for original laws of nature.
What difference would it make if it's innate or not? It's an innate concept.
Let's say it's just arbitrary. I mean, like, came up with rules.
No. You look at the
set of rules which are in line with the reality concerning society.
that's what you mean by innate.
Did I say innate?
Yeah.
And what you're saying,
you made concept.
I never came to
this. Oh,
no, no, forget about that. See, that's what I'm asking about. That.
Yeah, I'm just asking, what difference does that make?
Oh, well, I don't know what difference it makes. It's just an interesting question. Interesting point. What is an innate concept in the mind of justice? In other words, it has a practical difference. I'll tell you where it comes in. I'll tell you where it comes in a little later.
It has a practical difference.
You should play the distinct position. I'll tell you where it comes in later. But what's
it's a practical difference that you can use in each society. And each society has
innate. If there's a real justice based on reality, so then you can say that's Jeremy's wrong. Otherwise, you can't. This whole idea of that is going to work.
That's right.
This is based on the assumption that there is an absolute
justice.
It's based on a metaphysical assumption. I mean, people don't realize. They think that people don't realize because they don't know what they're doing. See, people aren't rational enough to know what they're doing. They'll deny philosophy and they'll set up a Nuremberg. Nuremberg is philosophy. But if you set up a trial, a world trial, then your assumption is, your premise is that there is an absolute realist and every justice, right? Oh, that is a philosophical argument. Can you prove it? People can argue the first point in that direction. It's just pure emotions. But over here, their emotions are to get to retribution, so therefore they use that philosophy. Of course, when you ask them their personal life, they'll say another thing. Lose this.
What is those rules, which are in line with the reality, concerning society?
What about society? Say Krishna something, not Krishna.
What are you saying?
Gemara tells him not. Isaac mitzvah, patur mitzvah. Osek mitzvah patur mitzvah. Ben Azai did not have to have children. Why? Teresa Nasa, not Isaac mitzvah patur mitzvah.
So he's the only guy that was
Torah Samnasa. Well, I'm
the only guy who was Torah Samnasa.
Every guy, oh, over there. Now that's the different story. See, Ben Azai has two things. Because in having children, there's two things involved. First of all, there's the mitzvah of having children. But secondly, there's the harm that results from a person being in a state in which his mind, his fantasies are attracting his libido. So therefore, marriage is a situation which removes the fantasy. So it's beneficial to him. Now, even if a person is Torah Samnasa, but if he has that fantasy which is distracting him, so then he has to get married, right? But then as I said, he did not have a fantasy. Koshkin Ashi Batara. That is complete sublimation. The further the thing on it, the less I on it. So he asked whether, one of the questions, is it possible the guy was capable of such a great, tremendous degree of sublimation? Naturally, from the rest of the book, on the show. What a low character.
Would you say,
although this takes care of most instances, there still remain a number of instances in which there's a concept of justice. The concept being that an individual must sacrifice himself, his own, it would appear, his own happiness. Let's just leave that question right now. His own happiness for the sake of society. In classical case is Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Moshe Rabbeinu who spent his time with the directing the message. Taking them here, taking them there. Well, Torah, in fact, receiving Torah and giving Torah, that wasn't really a loss. Because there he gained himself in that knowledge. But arguing with them, talking to them, I mean, this, what did he gain from that? So he gained very little. Obviously, what he got from that. Right? So in the act of leadership, that was a waste. And the only reason that he did it was because the justice demanded that he do it. What? Then I got to argue with God for 7 days. You want to do it. And then God proved him that he has to do it.
So now let's get that proof.
What?
Let's get that proof.
God gave him all this.
God's proof of justice.
Yes, I understand he does. It's a case we do.
The son won't be able to.
It's smarter than you are. He doesn't do that. He really has enough to do. The son is smarter than the father.
Yeah, you guys have put one. You have to support
the son. What? If the son's smarter than the father?
Right. Yeah.
You have to give up your line. Yeah. The line is question. Let's see. That's my son. Makes quite clear that the guy gives it to his son. Goodbye. That's smart also. But it's one of the two, either him or his son. He says, who will be know who called him? But am I have to know who is around here on Pascha. So you have eventually, my chef will be the only chef that's left. Yes. Ratzalum Matar, paragraph 1. Hayo Ratzalum Matar, V'yeshlo Ben. Ratzalum Matar, who called him up now? V'emay ebenon Navon, U'maskiu, Lohavin Mashiyom, Yaiser Imenu, B'nai Kodem. Vafo Pisha B'nai Kodem, Lohi Vafo Lo.
What do you have to say?
If you do, people will immediately be very happy with that one. Exchange this little woman has been no customer to see little woman at. Yeah, that's a question of justice. So the question is,
next question. Let's say.
So you have to benefit the self first when it comes.
Can't say five guys learning is better than one guy. That's great. Because knowledge cannot be measured in numbers. Can't be able to measure knowledge in numbers. Can't say five guys learning is worth more than one guy. It's not multiplied that way. That's a qualitative factor. One guy's learning. One or barn couple, one or pine, but in 50,000 people money. Okay. So what did we say? You see, by the Avos had a tremendous desire
maybe
to make sure that justice is implemented in this world. There's a tremendous desire for Yitzchak. Generations and generations ahead. What about Ram Kev? There's a generation ahead. Can your offspring, who emotionally can relate beyond three, four generations, to see what some intellectual force. Some conviction there. What's the conviction?
It's based on something.
It's on the motion.
Maybe when Moshe, how do you know Moshe really gave up when he had to leave?
Moshe
had
been in the
same.
Yeah, right.
He had
to
have
Cain, Leia Moshe, Cain, the rest of the
diverse.
Right. There's
a woman.
Woman,
see that? Right.
Kals Raj. There's a Nashadai
Takam.
He answers like this. When you want to get a Nahala, when you want to get the money,
you
get a just man at the supper.
So from here we made a leap into metaphysics. Right? And we said like this. We said that there is, we said like this, we said, God created man, right? God created this world. And he created man and he gave man the perfect system. Right? Now we said that it is apparently inherent in his reality that this creation should be true. That this creation should take place. Right? God's. Right?
What?
In other words, you can't say an external force coerced God to create man. Right?
You have to say it's his nature to
do that. Yes, it's in his nature, right? And we have to say, and his nature is knowledge. His essence is knowledge, right? And he operates with knowledge?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So therefore, knowledge dictates that this system be implemented.
Right.
Right? Knowledge dictates that the man be created.
There's only if you say justice is the innate concept.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not saying the innate concept yet. I'm not saying that yet. I'm saying knowledge dictates that the system of the Torah be implemented. This is the perfect system. Right? Okay. So then we made one step. So we said, and is the philosopher a lover of knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
So insofar as he loves knowledge, so we must say that he wants the system to be implemented. That's the system, the fact that the system is implemented is a result of knowledge.
Here's one question.
Right? Right? So therefore we said that the love of knowledge demands that the person implement the system. But there's one loophole there.
First of all, let me ask you a question.
We say that metaphysically there is a system of justice, which God gave us, the perfect system, right? And it is rational of this system be implemented. So therefore, we said, insofar as a person is in love with the rational, so therefore he must desire that this system be implemented. And therefore,
he's not in love with the whole rational.
And therefore, a person must sacrifice himself because of love for...
He's in love with the rational,
that
helps out.
What?
He's
in love with that system
as far as applies himself, not
right.
Anybody else.
That's
right.
The question. That's the question. But the question is, he really doesn't love the rational, per se. Right? That's what he's saying.
Right.
But what does he love? The enjoyment he gets out of thinking.
Right?
That's what he likes. He likes to enjoy his out of thinking.
Right.
But he doesn't care really for the rational itself. Right? Okay, that's the question. Yeah. Right. And if you like the rational, so therefore you must love the implementation of the system. But the question is, in what way?
Well, no. God gave.
Rationality dictates that this should be implemented.
Right.
Right? Oh, now you love rationality, so therefore you must want to be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's metaphysical. It's metaphysical. It's not ethical anymore. See, when you explain the ethics, then your question's done. But once you go to metaphysics, it comes up that metaphysically this is the rationality.
Yeah,
right? The only question is in what way?
Metaphysically.
Right. That's what we'll list. We said we've shown that it's. We've shown that it's beneficial. Beneficial because it's rational. Since absolute rationality dictates that this be implemented, right? And so therefore, this is rational. And if you like the rational, so therefore you have to want it to be implemented. It's supposed to like the rational. But absolute rationality is that it must be implemented, right? That doesn't come up to last time. The only question remains is in what way?
Yeah.
In what way does the individual How this rationality relates, in what way does the individual gain benefit from this rationality? Is that this way? Right? That's the question. But we've shown that it's rational. And we've shown that he who likes rationality must want the system to be implemented.
Right, he likes, we didn't say who likes
it. Right.
First of all, we don't know if anybody likes rationality.
He knows the rationality.
The philosopher doesn't necessarily love every rationality. Did we say that?
One second. No, that's true. When we say the philosopher loves the rational, it doesn't mean
he loves that which is rational.
He loves that which is rational, right? Stop. Philosopher doesn't really love the rational, but he likes contemplating. He enjoys contemplating the rational. Right?
Yeah.
So then the question is, why should he do it? In other words, when you say loves the rational, there's two meanings there. Does it mean that he loves what? He loves the implementation of something rational, something which is rational, or he loves just thinking about it.
They're all depicted.
You say,
get
up in
the morning. Right?
Yeah,
sure.
It doesn't mean it's beneficial.
It's beneficial. It's beneficial for the person, right? Why do I care if the guy gets up or not?
What's that? I don't know. When you say, I just want to see what you mean with me. That's the point I said, that's what's with me. When we say it's rational for a system to be implemented, we can't say it's beneficial. It's beneficial that it's being implemented, right? That's what it means.
For who?
Well, I don't know for who, but that must be
some. It might not be for you.
I don't know, but there must be some kind of thing that's being implemented, right?
I know.
Okay. Now, didn't God tell us to implement?
Yes.
He told us to do it, right?
Right.
As part of itself, that we can implement it.
Right.
Therefore, we must definitely benefit it.
In the implementation?
Only let's say God wants to hurt us.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to understand.
You want to say, how? You only ask how
it's beneficial.
How it's beneficial.
How we benefit, right.
Definitely, we see we are.
Why can't, let's say, a million people would benefit, right?
Yeah.
So we can't give that law because one person won't benefit from
it. Give it to you.
What?
He gave it to you.
He gave it to Moshe
Rabbeinu. Let's say he gives it to the whole people, right?
Therefore, ultimate rationality dictates that this be implemented, right? Now, if the philosopher loves ultimate rationality, then he wants the system to be implemented. But maybe the philosopher doesn't love ultimate rationality. What he loves is contemplating the rational. So therefore, he has noticed that this has nothing to do with it. Right?
Okay, hold it.
Now, the ultimate rationality is, in terms of the absolute universe, the absolute rationality is that this system be implemented. Right? But the philosopher likes contemplating the rational. Right? Not doing that which is rational. When we say he does that which is rational, we mean he does that which is rational only to the best enjoyment in contemplating the rational. But here you're telling me he's not going to gain that at the end. Right? There's no, just an absolute love of rationality. Why should the philosopher have an absolute love of rationality? Right?
Yes.
Right? Now here you're telling me this one thing is an exception. Why should this be an exception?
You should follow the same rule.
Sure.
That's the whole thing. What's the difference?
Follow
the same rule.
It's Tarasa Manasa. Does he have to do justice?
Not the
the guy is Tarasa Manasa. Does he have some kind of justice?
What?
The guy is Tarasa Manasa. He's
kind of justice, right?
What's that his pleasure for moments?
But this is Moshe Rabbeinu's. I have to be leader. Pleasure. Enjoyment. But now you're coming to a case where he gets an enjoyment.
He's coming to a
lower. The drive to Rubino is another area, right? Now doesn't that take away from Kachman and ask the father to pull it back? So he's in the middle of the sugi and I ask to stop being crunch. Now it's hard to get back from the sugi, so he hates that. Is it true that God's nature is a nature which is most conducive to knowledge? Isn't there a nature?
Most conducive to knowledge?
I mean to say that his essence is an essence which can contain knowledge to the highest degree.
Right.
So then insofar as a person is a replica of that nature, so that is how it so insofar as he's a replica of that nature, so isn't it true that in the same amount he will also his nature is also changed so that it's most conducive to knowledge?
Right.
Insofar as man approaches the nature of God, isn't it true that he will also be most conducive?
Yeah, yeah.
Since God's nature inherently is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is it true that in his nature, that he has, that his nature dictates that this should be implemented? Right? In other words, that he has a desire that this should be implemented, he doesn't desire to totally equivocal way. Right? Okay. So then insofar as man has that desire, so then his nature is also raised to that level?
No.
Well, you just told me that, you just told me that his
nature
insofar as man's nature is in line with that, right?
Yeah, it should be implemented.
Implemented, right? Ah, so insofar as man's nature approaches that nature, so then by that same degree, his nature is...
wants to be implemented.
Is one which... wants to be implemented. And insofar as he has the, insofar as his nature is parallel to God's nature, right?
Right.
Isn't it true that his nature also becomes one, which is most conducive to knowledge?
Right.
Now, is it God's nature that this should be implemented?
Right.
Oh, so therefore, his man's nature also should be implemented.
The benevolence that he should implement it.
But once he has a desire, it should be implemented, so therefore he does it, because this is a natural desire. In other words, once one child has to have a desire, it should be implemented, right? Right? And isn't it true that once a person has a desire to do something that he has to follow it? In other words, he has a desire.
Very true. Then we want to understand why.
I'll tell you, explain one more thing. Explain one more chazal. One more chazal. It says, V'halachta b'drachav.
Yeah.
How does the Rambam interpret V'halachta b'drachav? Mahu
chazal.
Mahu rachum afatoi. Mahu nikra. Rambam is differently. The Gemara says, Mahu rachum afatoi. Rambam is there. Mahu nikra rachum afatoi. Ye rachum. Mahu nikrachan nafato ayechan. Right?
What does that mean?
Okay. It means that the is different, because otherwise it's, if you don't say it that way, it comes up that it's a question of anthropomorphism.
Unity.
Who went wrong over there first?
What's the unity?
Well, he has one unity, right? Anthropomorphic is going
to be. Figure it out.
What is it in English?
Forget it. That's that one. But anyways, the point is Mahu afata. What does Mahu afata mean? It means that insofar as your nature is in line with God's nature, so therefore your nature is one which is most conducive to knowledge, right? And this, isn't this a part of his nature? Ah, so therefore it must be part of your nature.
Insofar as your
approach to the pain. He doesn't have to go, no pain for him, they have to create a world, you know? But for us, we have to go for the pain of helping people. For us, it's not beneficial for our nature.
Yeah, you must say he's doing his action also. He does the action too, right?
That's right, because it's not pain in the ass for him.
Whatever it is, isn't there an action that he does?
Yes.
Okay.
But you could say it's beneficial for his nature, but not for us. Our natures aren't the same.
We have the same problem that we had before.
It's like
Maybe man has a different nature.
Well, he does have a different nature. The other question is, you could say it's a part of like God.
So you're saying that maybe the difference in my nature would render
this. That's what I mean.
Right.
But I can see. I can show you how.
I said that since God dictates that we should do it, so I said that is false.
No, but let's see. I show you.
Not true. Of course it makes a difference. It affects the universe.
As far as it's a chair. In other other words, if you don't need it, let's say for instance you invent something for a specific purpose and the purpose is gone. So you don't need the invention. Would you have done it? Would you have made it to free if you knew you didn't need it? No, so therefore the other it's here doesn't make any difference to you, right? Right?
Its existence doesn't make any difference.
Yes, it doesn't make any difference.
Well, you can't see none of
it. That's annoying, right?
Yes.
Now, one more premise, and that is this, that a thing which has no purpose in existence does not exist in the universe. God does not allow a thing to exist when it has no purpose. Right?
Does not allow a thing to exist?
Right. No, a thing has no purpose, then its existence ceases. A thing exists as long as it has a purpose. When it has no purpose, its existence ceases because there's no reason for its existence. Existence is a positive thing, and lack of existence is a negative. In other words, let's say, for instance, like we said, we made the chair, right? So therefore, you wouldn't make a chair. You wouldn't make a chair or a table if you didn't need to learn, right? Okay. Now, but with us, it's just an action of making the table. But let's say you had to have a constant, let's say there was certain laws you required in order to have the table exist in the world all the time, right? So therefore, if you, the moment you wouldn't need that table, so the table would cease to exist.
Right?
Right.
Right.
Okay, just like you wouldn't make it originally, so over here, if you need it, there's a certain energy which is necessary to keep the table in existence, right?
Right.
So therefore, if you wouldn't need the table, so you wouldn't expend
wouldn't
that
energy.
So therefore, the table would collapse.
That's correct.
It would disappear.
Right.
Okay. Now, is it true that there's an ultimate order in the universe, and this is God's order?
Okay.
Okay? Alright, now in that ultimate order, isn't it true that every individual in an ultimate order has a purpose?
Must be,
right? Okay. Now insofar as you are a part of that ultimate order.
What about in that ultimate order cause and effect? Like God has, he creates a system and it just so happens that one person is born in that system.
You want to say, no, first let me finish. Take part of that. So therefore, so insofar as the ultimate system is concerned, everything in that system has a purpose and exists because it has a purpose. Right? Okay. Now therefore, we say as soon as the purpose ceases, so therefore the existence ceases. Right? Okay. Now let's say you recognize your purpose. Right? Would it be logical to go against that purpose? In other words, let's say for instance you're running a state. And you need shoemakers. Now suddenly a shoemaker decides that he's going to be a logician. But his position is a shoemaker. Now you're running the state. Now the moment he's going to be a logician, isn't it true that he's worthless? Mm-hmm. And if it would require an expenditure of energy to maintain him, well, so you have to feed him, you have to give him food. Isn't it true you'd stop feeding him?
Mm-hmm.
And he would cease to exist.
Yes.
Right? Now isn't it rational for God to operate in the same way?
No.
Certainly it is. Because if there's an ultimate order, there's an ultimate order, right?
He's not expending energy.
No, one second. Insofar as there's an ultimate order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right, so therefore anything in that order. Anything in that order which is not in line with the order does not exist. God will not permit it to continue to exist.
But we see that
it's true. Because it attracts from the order. I know that my purpose in existence is X.
I'm crazy.
My purpose in existence is X,
yeah.
Right? Now, let's say, for instance, I say, okay, that's my purpose in existence, but I want to thwart that purpose. I want to argue against that purpose,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, isn't it true that if I don't fulfill that purpose, that then I will have to cease to exist because I'm not in part of the ultimate system, right?
Right.
Oh, wait a second. And do I wish to cease to exist? No. So therefore, I require, I'm obligated to comply with justice.
You make a lot of.
Moshe Rabbeinu told Paro, "V'ulam ba'avur zois ha'amaraticha leman haraischa es godly uleman saper shemi
b'cholos."
The only reason that Paro was able to exist was in order to saper shemi b'cholos. But if it wasn't for that, it would have ceased to exist a long time ago. Okay, there was that he would be able to explain about the greatness of God in all the world, unless he saw all those pieces. That's why God brought the power to exist. Otherwise, God would have destroyed him, which means that he had no purpose, because he was a Russia. Right?
He's
saying that every Russia that exists has a purpose.
He's saying that somebody who sees decay and justice will cease to exist.
Wow. Right.
That's we have no purpose.
That's right,
we
have no purpose.
Well, we have to show why. We have to show why there's an expenditure of energy.
But this, you see that it's true. You see that the Russia...
If we hold that.
Well, you see, but this is the premise is not one which we've doubted until now. It's a premise that has been accepted all along. The Rambam says there's no such thing as Malachas Artola. There's no thing in the universe without a purpose. That's one of the premises of all the philosophers. Yeah. That everything exists for a purpose.
Yeah.
No,
it's an old premise. Okay, but let's hold that premise.
So you say that the guy's only proof purpose.
The difficulty of philosophy is that a person approaches 15 questions, mixes 15 questions with one. That premise that premise didn't bother us. That's a premise of philosophy. It's a metaphysical premise. Is that the problem of justice? I want to know if we solve justice. Forget about that premise for a second.
Hey, if we hold that premise, we solve it.
That premise is a premise by itself, a separate area. Hold on a second. Assuming that premise, if we should be able to prove the basic premise of the philosophers and the basic premise of the theorists says that nothing exists without a purpose. Right?
Right.
Are you saying everything exists must have a purpose or must fulfill a purpose?
What?
Everything exists must have a purpose or must fulfill a purpose?
Nice class.
One type of justice where the person still gains benefits. Right? Where I give up my material things for somebody else. So this is justice where I gain myself. Because I withdraw from the material. Or if I give up my time to somebody else. And this means teaching all of these many instances I can gain. But by giving up my time, I'd be using it in that sense. So I gain, remove myself from the physical. You see? But then the question with the person that's totally involved in the talk, Dan. And in him, there's no gain. So why should he indulge in justice? What gain is there? It's a loss. Right, it's a loss. That was the problem. It's a loss. Yeah. We said there's two types. One type which is individual gain. In other words, a person gives up his time from nonsensical things in order to help somebody. So therefore, he's improving himself in his desires from the physical. In this respect, he improves himself. Or because of his physical things, he's improving himself. But the question was, what about a person that's totally perfected? And for him, it's nothing more than a loss. Because he could be thinking about the ideas. And now he's, instead of this, he's involving himself in physical performances. So what forces him to abide by the law of justice? True that the physical world represents ideas. Correct or incorrect?
That's what
I mean. Otherwise, I mean the physical world that we live in expresses certain ideas, certain concepts. For instance, the way the whole universe operates, the way the universe functions, in a set order, expresses certain ideas of the physics. Right, where do we get all our ideas of the physics from? From the external world. Right?
Mm.
Right?
Alright.
Okay. Now, the question is this. Hold on. Oxford care. If the physical world was destroyed, would it disturb the philosopher? The physical world was then destroyed. What I mean is, would the philosopher care if these things are destroyed? These are, in other words, let's say, the way the planets go in orbit, the way the order of the universe. Would he care if these things are destroyed? What do you say? We're taking away. Absolutely not. The world.
So there'd be a different rule of physics, obviously. If there weren't physical bodies floating around, then something else would be. It's just space you construct it differently.
No, there'd be an absence.
What if there's
an... Okay. Yesterday, that definitely he would mind if this was destroyed. Why? Because by destroying the physical world, you're destroying simultaneously the ideas that are contained in them. Correct? Right? Now he has no place to draw from. Right?
Less place to draw them. All right, now let me ask you another question. Let's say, for instance, the philosopher has already absorbed in his mind all the ideas pertaining to a certain part of the universe. He extracted all the ideas from that part. Right? Would he then care whether if that part is destroyed or not?
No.
What do you say? When he sees the perfection expressed in the physical, when he sees those ideas expressed in the physical, the question is this: does the philosopher perceive enjoyment when he sees the perfect ideas implemented in the physical world? Is that enjoyable or not? Is that enjoyable or not? What do you say? It's a good question. It's a good question, yeah? That's a good question. That's a good question. In other words, when I understand the theory of how it works, and then I see this perfect theory expressed in the physical form, right? So is that, when I see the physical form, of course, he's not interested in the physical form,
right.
But the physical only insofar as it reflects the idea. You see, but the expression of the idea in the physical perfects the thought itself. It's part of the thought itself. Let's assume that the ultimate enjoyment is just the ideas themselves.
Well, there's two things here. New ideas and old ideas. In other words, let's say I see the sun come up every day, and I have a theory of the sun coming up every day.
Right.
So, I mean, I see the theory every day, I see the same theory, nothing new.
Yeah.
So let's say I study psychology, and I see a new point in detail.
Right.
There I might get more enjoyment. I mean, even though I have the basic theory,
well, it's
I see it in detail how it operates in this particular point, but it's still a new idea, because the details are different.
Yeah, the distinction between old ideas and new ideas, right? Yeah, but
I'm not saying that the old idea is not bliss. I'm just saying there is such a distinction. I'm not saying...
In general.
There's
nothing to do with physical.
I'm saying there could be a difference between them. I'm just pointing out.
Right. But the only thing is that difference between old and new will always be a difference. What do you say it's with the physical, what do you say it's without the physical? It's a separate problem. In other words, there'll always be a difference. An old idea, let's say you don't see the sun rising every morning, you have the theory. So you always think about it. So you say, no, I thought about it a few times, but it's not. Right? That would be, even if I should maintain that the theory without the physical is the enjoyment. The physical plays no role at all in adding to the enjoyment, you see? Even if I should say that. So then, I'll still get tired of old ideas. It's a different point, you can't talk. Right? But our question is, nevertheless, the new idea. Let's say the new idea which you enjoy. So the question is, this new idea, is there any enhancement in the fact that it's in the physical or not, as far as man is concerned? Granted, the perfect state is with the pure ideas. But as far as man is physical, you said there is anything additional there? Or not? What would the answer be? Yes?
Well, I'm just saying, I don't see how that's being enjoyed. Because, well, if he doesn't enjoy the physical thing itself, right? Yeah. Seeing the physical thing, but if he has the thought, he's, like you said, he's thinking about the idea of the thing, he's got the thought, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the choice.
Yeah, but the thought, yeah. So what is the question,
really?
So what's the, how do we answer this question? So you're saying a lot that the physical doesn't matter, right?
Well, the
thing is,
you're trying to see if he enjoys the
physical thing.
That
doesn't enjoy the physical thing.
That's
physical.
So what's the thing?
Of course he does. Doesn't enjoy the physical.
He enjoys the thought, right?
Right.
So why does this thought be different than any other?
I mean, he enjoys the physical as far as the thought.
He enjoys the thought, or doesn't enjoy the physical?
He doesn't enjoy the physical.
He doesn't enjoy himself, that he sees being physical, he sees how fits in.
Right.
He enjoys the thought of it, the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
So why should I be any different than any other
thought? So I mean, just the idea, not
you said the idea comes from the
physical.
Just the idea.
You said idea comes from the physical.
That's it, huh?
So what would
Well, we're saying insofar as he's human, insofar as a person is human, so the ideas come from the physical, isn't that true?
There are two different directions. You have to go in the other direction.
Which
you have to have the idea and apply it to the physical.
Right.
No, your question.
Right.
Your question wasn't abstract. The question was that if you abstracted all theories,
right,
that broader physical world would disintegrate. You have all the theories. So I mean, the only question is an application of the getting logic.
Right. Yeah, but the question, when we say application, we mean would the application add to the theory? That's the question. In other words, seeing it in the physical, does that add to his comprehension of the idea? Watch it?
Yeah.
Well, he's in this first argument, I guess. He said, you see that all the ideas we have are from the physical, right?
That's right. That's when we originally get the idea.
Right.
But once we have the idea...
And the question is, that's there. So the question is, once you have the ideas, this is the question. The question is, once you have the ideas, which originally came from the physical, can a person completely separate them from the physical? Are they totally abstract without any physical idea involved at all?
Why not?
Ah, that's not so simple.
No, it's a fourth.
What's the master of the idea?
What?
Question is, when you have an idea, is the idea completely removed from the physical? Or does the idea always contain the physical in it? Because everything that you're thinking of, every idea, you have an idea of the sun, always contains part of it, always contains the physical in it. You see? You can't have an idea of the sun without the physical.
You may just find the possibility how it could be separated from the physical.
That possible. Why a person has a certain emotional feeling that God is unreal. Right? No matter how much he analyzes it, he still has a certain feeling that God's unreal. Question is, where that feeling comes from, right? So we explain where it comes from. We said that feeling comes from one thing. The fact that our convictions in this world is based upon the physical. Are based upon the physical, right? And therefore, in the categories, we always see the categories that we're dealing with separately and combined. Like we see matter without ideas. I mean, we see matter without life, right? And we see life without soul. So therefore, we comprehend that this is a breakdown, this is a logical breakdown. But we have never seen the idea of existence without matter. Right? So even though logically our minds conceive of it, that there's such a thing as existence without matter, because just like there could be matter without life, and we see this breakdown, right? There's no reason why there can't be existence without matter. Right? So logically the mind sees it. But yet emotionally a person feels a certain unrealness towards God. Why? Because he's never seen that breakdown in the physical world. So we see that insofar as that is concerned, we see that the physical plays a role in man's life, in conviction. Right? That's why people think about God. No, you know, it's not real. Why do they feel it's not real? Because they've never seen this breakdown. This breakdown obviously is one you can't see because it's only in God. So therefore you've never seen this breakdown before. But you've seen other breakdowns, and in your mind you parallel it to the other breakdowns. So you say logically, yes. But the emotion of unrealness is because you've never seen that breakdown in this world.
Which breakdown is that?
The breakdown of existence without the physical. You see? So therefore you assume, for instance, let's say everything that was physical had life. So then you'd have the same difficulty perceiving a breakdown of physical without life.
A rock.
Right. You see? Because you never saw that before. Right? Now when it comes to God, it's part. When it comes to God, so what do you have? You have the concept of existence without the physical, right? But you've never seen that breakdown before. And since you've never seen that breakdown before, so it seems unreal, it seems strange to you. Because all your beliefs are based upon, all your convictions, I should say, not beliefs, all your convictions are based upon, the physical, sense perception. It all begins with sense perception.
So actually,
it's a pasuk in the Torah. I mean, it's a pasuk in the Torah. Ki lo yirani adam machai. What does it mean, ki lo yirani adam machai? Make sure anyone understands everything about Kosh Baruch. He said, no, ki lo yirani adam machai. Finally, as long as man's soul operates through the senses is the medium which gives him the ideas, so there's a certain abstract area which beyond which he cannot go. There's an abstract barrier. So it's not even my shavin, I cannot perceive it, because the soul also operates through the senses, just like ours. So since it was through the senses, he could not reach the highest level. The only total perception of God could be after death, because then there's removal of the physical, and the soul perceives through a different mechanism. But in this world, the soul needs the physical in order to perceive. And since it needs the physical, if it doesn't see the physical breakdown, so these things become unreal to it. It has no other means of operating, you see? The soul is really limited by its attachment to the physical.
You're saying two different things here.
Yeah, why?
Because first you're talking about the emotions. Let's say there's an abstract thinker, but he can see a thing without the emotions. And he can see them, and definitely he can see abstract ideas without the emotions.
True.
true.
And then that's what you said in the talking. I was talking about that guy that doesn't need the physical anymore.
Yeah, well, the second illustration of Moshe points to the second illustration, but the first illustration.
Which is the first illustration?
About the emotions. I mean, that emotionally you can't take the certain abstract ideas. But let's say a guy works himself out to become an abstract thinker, then emotionally he can't.
That's what we're going to cover in the case of Moshe. I'm just trying to say Moshe shows you how far that there's a limit to how much a person in this world can remove himself from the emotional, emotional, physical conviction. See? That shows there's a limit, right? Yes.
I don't understand why I'm trying to have this doubt. Person who's super abstract.
No, not a doubt. Don't need to straighten that out. I don't mean that he doubts God. See, a person that doesn't listen to that, he knows it. But there's something in him, there's something in him which gives him a certain feeling of unreal. Of course, a feeling of unrealness, an emotion. There's two things. There's the mind and then there's the emotions, right? There's the conviction. Let's just say conviction, right? Now, in terms of conviction in this world, is based, always comes through the senses. Now, of course, an abstract person knows that he's not going to allow this feeling to interfere with his conviction. You understand what I mean? Because he knows he follows logic. So he knows this logic is proven, no matter how much it goes against the senses, he knows this is so. Right?
Is that the person has to have an emotion? Is that an inherent emotion in the person?
Apparently, it's something which exists. Insofar as his convictions are based upon the physical, right?
You don't have to bring a case of motion.
Yeah.
To illustrate it. People depend on their sense perception through things, even though they see something logically. Let's say they come to a conclusion logically, but then they have to do the experiment to see if it's really right. You never hear them saying, I'll believe it when I see it. People are dependent on their senses. I don't know if you really have to bring the case.
What's your argument?
The only way I can understand what you're telling me is an inherent emotion in a person, something that he can't control.
Yeah.
Like hunger, right?
The question is how much? Right, to what degree?
Well, if it's inherent, it would be the same thing everywhere. Right? That he can't control, like this emotion tells him that he has to have this certain doubt in God. You have to close it down.
No, it's not a doubt!
Emotionally, it's a doubt.
No.
Well, he can't conceive it as real, right?
No.
This is the doubt
cause of this.
It's just a doubt.
You can't define
his existence. Is that what you're saying?
He doesn't know it enough about it. But Moshe simply couldn't see the idea because of the physical stuff in him.
Why can't we ask the
guy? Think of it like this. Let's say this one's really interesting.
He couldn't see that thing.
Yes.
That's right.
In other words, like this. You see, that's the shallow motion is like this. See, the first step, he sees it's true. But he just sees that the conviction doesn't follow. The emotional conviction doesn't follow because it's based upon the physical. But he sees that. But he knows it's true. But once he's dealing in that area already, it's going to be difficult to make a few more steps. So the next step might be impossible. Because he can't operate. He doesn't have a firm grasp on this step. Insofar as his soul is operating through the physical, and insofar as the physical doesn't follow in this area, so the soul does not have a firm grasp on this idea. You see? So therefore, he can't maneuver with these things, because he doesn't grasp them firmly. You follow what I mean?
But he seems to be attempting to still for the first step.
Which?
I mean, to the emotional. Yeah, I don't see that.
When I say emotional, yeah, right. Insofar as he's studying the physical.
But isn't it very possible that a person faced that stage?
And it should be as real to him. In other words, the soul should see it as real, just as clearly as a person who was non-physical. No, that's impossible. See, obviously, see, there's a limitation there.
There's an emotion. I'm not going to see you while you're
going. In terms of conviction, in terms of the soul grasping the thing. Insofar as the soul requires the physical, so this element,
this element is always going to be difficult for him to grasp totally. He might come to the conclusion that this is so, but he can't really grasp it 100% because the soul is dependent upon the physical. Insofar as the soul depends upon the physical, so there's a lack in the apprehension of this idea. Insofar as it depends upon the physical. I'm not actually defining right now whether it's emotional or the soul. I mean, so let's just leave it. Let's just leave it this way. I mean, emotional. I don't know, what do you mean by emotional? I mean, emotional.
Can't check the thing that's separated from the soul. Emotionally, can't be an abstract thinker. There's usually an abstract thinker and an abstract thinker.
Yeah, but isn't there yet? But even the abstract thinker, we said the abstract thinker can maneuver in that area. But whether his soul grasps the thing as well. As he grasps an idea which is expressed in the concrete, that we don't have to say this is necessarily so.
You don't have to say it's not necessarily so. Once it's a logical idea, maybe it's okay.
Yeah, but we said, no,
but maybe I'm reading an idea that he can't grasp. It's physical, but once he grasps it, why can't it be a certain conviction?
It's real to his soul. The answer is because reality to his soul is based to an extent upon the physical. Insofar as it's based upon the physical, so it's not real.
Even though he sees the idea.
Even though he sees the idea, but as far as based on the physical, it's not real. I don't know what happens with Yashem Kito. But by Yashem Kito, we should interpret it. How should we interpret Yashem Kito by the, I don't remember the realms of
actual.
What does it mean? It means Kito means that the physical embodies the ideas. You see, by Yashem Kito means, what it means was good. It was good means that it expressed the ideas. In other words, that the physical was following those ideas which God originally
ideas the way it should be run.
Right, that's right. Kito means that the physical followed the ideas. Physical was a direct expression of the ideas. That's Kito. Right? Okay. That's why all the Farshim went with Ibrahim, that you don't have Kito on Monday. Why? Because on the second day. Because on the second day, the whole it wasn't completed till the middle of the third day. The unit, all the ideas, the whole system. That system wasn't completed till then. So it wasn't. There was no way Yashem Kito. Because Yashem Kito means on a total system that the system's working well. Okay. It was apparently there was six systems there. Six systems. Okay.
God's thinking that insofar as the physical world is concerned also application.
What?
God's thinking also includes application.
Yes.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, there must be some benefit there.
Yeah, but that's, what's the deal with God, though? Because I'm going to have problems. I said God definitely needs the physical.
What?
You can't say that God needs the physical.
No, he doesn't need the physical, but he definitely operates in application.
Yeah, right.
There must
well,
be
some no
benefit.
No question about
that. There must be some benefit.
For him?
Why should it be us also?
I mean, for us, you mean? Yeah, correct. Okay, good. Right. Yeah. Oh, you mean, since he does it that way,
there must be
so obviously there must be some benefit for
him. Thinking, right?
Okay, I see. You mean, so that would prove that you started the argument that there is a benefit for us in thinking,
the abstract. See the application, yeah.
You'd see the physical thing in front of the abstract.
Yeah.
That's good point.
Well,
it was possible to say, quite possible to say, that seeing the realities, adds to the grasp that the soul has on the ideas.
Like God would say, once you see it, then think it again doesn't help any part.
Yeah, agree. Same thing as once you see the idea, thinking about it again doesn't help.
Right.
Right?
So
in
other words,
it's the first time. First
one's
time
to drop the idea for physical,
right.
You don't need physical to be maintained.
Right.
No, you want to see it apply, no?
No.
You want to see it apply the first time.
First the first time.
No, you don't see it the first time. Once you saw the idea, once you saw this thing, this is the physical world, right?
Yeah.
Then when you have the thought, you can always identify it with physical objects.
Yeah, you see it actually it's a different area of physical.
So they will always make it more real to you.
Why? Yeah. I've got two arguments.
Why?
Right. Once it just feels to count on your time.
Let's say I have the proof of, proof of love of knowledge. Then I give another proof. Doesn't it make it
another
seem clear?
Proof by the thought theory is better. It's different from the theory. You worked out more thinking. You worked on thinking again, right? You worked on
new application is more thinking. There's a different fact. I mean, it works in a different way. And so then the application is different, too.
Oh, so you mean...
And the individual is different.
So
the species and the genus, it's the same.
If it's not a place where you abstract theory again, that's true. But it's the same case, not abstracting theory
again. No, let's say I have a species, right?
And then I go down to the individual. Now, it could be infinite amount of individuals. Now, therefore, each time I attach it to that individual, it's another attachment to the physical. And if,
no,
there's, and if there's more conviction by attaching it to the different physicals, so then the energy is
done. No, it's not the individual.
So what? Oh, no, that's only if they... That we're not talking about a job. We're talking about conviction now. Because the conviction is more attached to the rhythm. The rhythm is more attached to the rhythm.
Say, no, once you catch the first time, it's catching.
What?
Once you catch the first time, it's already catching.
That wasn't the argument of a dilemma.
That was the argument.
The argument was that when you attach it to the rhythm, you have conviction. That means the more you attach it,
no,
the more attached
to the rhythm. No, that's the point. That's the point. What is it once you're convicted, once it's attached to the rhythm, the more you attach
it.
Right?
Then I see the theory and it's attached to the physical, right?
Right.
But they abstracted it, right?
It's attached there, it's attached.
Yeah, but no, it's attached because I abstracted it from there. In other words, the conviction is attached to the physical. Yeah, because the conviction is attached to the physical, which I started from, right? The conviction, right? But then as I apply it, right, I was saying that that each time you apply it, you're attaching it stronger to the physical. In other words, the conviction is attaching it to the physical. There should be more conviction. But Bernie pointed out that there's no proof for that. Before.
I mean, every time you go through it again, there should be more conviction.
If it's attaching what there is on.
Oh, no, that doesn't really make sense.
What if there are different examples, like you said? There's a difference between the
saturation point.
Well, I don't know if you can say that either. I mean, well, I don't have any proof, but I don't know if you have proof for the
other
side.
Every time you're going to say that the guy likes
I don't know if you have proof for the other side.
In a different way.
In a different way. With an infinite amount of
different amount of ways for the guy to perceive the same idea.
In different cases.
Well, let's say a guy sees the idea of gravity. He sees the two poles revolving around each other, one revolving around the other, right? I mean, every time he keeps looking at this, the idea gets improved.
Not the same physical, different illustrations of it, where he works out in a different area.
What's the different area you have to do with it? What's the different area? I mean, if it's the physical, they have the same thing, the same in the first area.
Right?
Let's
pick example one, right? Let's say a guy sees such a thing as physical,
right?
Directly. And then the thing would go away.
Right.
It's been destroyed.
Right.
Then you get the idea of God.
Right.
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 Without me being able to comprehend the idea of God.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So even though the thing's not here right now, but once you see it once,
right?
Once
right.
you get the idea, you have to see it right now.
Right?
Yeah. Let's pick the same thing applied in this case.
Yeah.
Let's say this person's tracked to some theory for the physical world, right?
So.
Now, when you have the theory, obviously, you'll be able to identify something in the physical, right? Because he's tracked to something in the physical, right? So whether or not the thing still exists after the abstraction is irrelevant. He's able to comprehend anything about the abstraction that's in the physical.
Yeah, but you're saying if it didn't abstract the physical.
No. I'm saying once the abstraction is physical, is this supposed to show that it's still necessary to maintain the physical?
No, I told you already now that once you have the physical. No. I'm saying let's say a person has the idea, but didn't see it operating in the physical.
All right.
That's the point. Yeah, by the way, why is it, you notice, God gave us the physical breakdown of all the ideas, right? Except one idea, there's no breakdown, and that's God, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Why, of course, couldn't that idea have a physical representation?
Because
there is nothing physical at all in relationship to God. God is the only thing, you see? You understand what I mean? That's the way God created the world, in which he gave you the breakdown of every idea expressed in the physical. So he showed you there's an idea of a body without life, an idea of life without a soul. There's an idea of soul without intelligence. Every idea has been broken down. But one idea he could not break down. One idea is the idea of existence without the physical. Why? Because that would require a physical thing, right? But then you're missing the idea. You understand what I mean? You see, every other idea could be demonstrated through the physical, except one idea cannot be demonstrated. That's the idea of existence without the physical. Because you can't possibly demonstrate that with physical.
You can't have it, you see?
It's by its very nature impossible to demonstrate through the physical. So that's why that's the area of God. That's the area which cannot be demonstrated through the physical.
Does that mean he chose it for any level?
That means that, I would say it means that this area is difficult, the most difficult to grasp, the soul to grasp. I don't think anybody would disagree with the whole realm of metaphysics. Why
sure.
And even those who grasp it, do not grasp it as they grasp the other ideas of the physical. I think the Roman proverb said too, mentioned by Gedalia's sources, but the
Anachasadar,
he says the four Abon Yechtasilapardis, even though they were Gedalia Yisrael, he says, they didn't all have power, the ability to see these things al Buryon. What's al Buryon? Crystal clear. Because man, once he goes into that area, since all his ideas come from the physical,
his soul, and the soul requires the physical of this world for conviction, so insofar as he's missing that tool, it gets very hazy. The mind gets very hazy in that area. Of course, and that's the same thing. That's all Moshe.
So it isn't only the emotions. Even logically, you can't possibly do it.
That's right. That's why I don't want to say the emotions.
But didn't they want to do it?
That means all of the Gemara means over there is that the other ones were damaged by it. The other ones came with false ideas.
Oh, still but
it still doesn't mean that Rabbi Akiva had a perfect, clear idea. He understood that the way he understood the Gemara about Metziah, Shnei Matzah V'Talos.
Difference?
Yeah. How's it possible to say? Yeah, but there aren't physical representations of it. He means, is it possible there are more ideas that God didn't give us physical representations of? It's possible. I'm saying that this idea couldn't give you a physical representation.
Oh, okay, that's true.
This is impossible. Okay. Because the idea is not a physical representation. Right? Okay. Alright. That's the idea about it. Okay. Yeah.
Why is having conviction to your ideas.
Attached to physical?
No. That I understand. No ideas that come. Why is that necessary? Why is that part of the enjoyment? What's the enjoyment?
All right. We're saying the enjoyment is the when the soul grasps the idea. That's the enjoyment, right?
I don't know if that's true. I thought it was true. I don't understand why that's true.
What? The soul grasping the idea is
when
the enjoyment?
You see an idea clear. I mean, if you don't see an idea clear, how do you really get it?
You enjoy thinking about the other
thing. I didn't think about it. I was talking about that. I wonder about now what enjoyment of the idea.
The enjoyment gets the idea, but that's not the real joy. The real joy is thinking about it. The thought process gets to the idea.
The thought process gets to the idea, not the idea itself?
Well, is that what you were saying? Well, we do tell us what
the real joy is.
We
enjoy
seeing the answer itself.
Yeah, well, we enjoy every step because every step we're getting knowledge, but every step is no idea. In other words, the working out itself is enjoyable. Because let's say we work out a wrong shot. But that itself is enjoyable, since you see that this chat is wrong. Now you see that this. In other words, that's knowledge too. You enjoy the knowledge. Now you've gained knowledge. You see that this is not the chat and basis. This idea you thought could be right. Now you see it's wrong. So you've gained knowledge. You've eliminated that. That's also knowledge. That's negative knowledge. Negative knowledge is knowledge. Right. Oh, so that's the enjoyment. But the enjoyment is each step that you see, each new idea you see. Each step. I'm not talking about what the active thing is enjoyable, but you're talking about something else, what the active thing is enjoyable, right? Am I right?
Yeah, well, that's what the enjoyment is, right?
The enjoyment is tight. Well, yeah, but the enjoyment, could you perceive the knowledge? Did you enjoy the active thing? You didn't have any thoughts? Okay. So the enjoyment is tied to the thoughts, right?
Right.
Okay, so we're talking about the thoughts. What are the active thing? The thoughts themselves, right? Don't you enjoy seeing an idea? Don't you enjoy seeing an idea?
Right.
See a thought, you see, wow, now I see the way this works, right? Is that an enjoyment?
Right.
Ah, that's what we're talking about. You mix up two enjoyments. You mix up the enjoyment of the act of thinking and the enjoyment of the ideas itself. Right? We're just talking about the enjoyment of the ideas itself, but there is an enjoyment when you see something clear in your mind, right? Let's say you don't know. You're thinking about a philosophical question. Is this the best way to live or is that the best way to live? And then you see the idea clearly. This is the best way to live. So they have an enjoyment of seeing the idea, right? Right? They have an enjoyment of understanding the idea. Are you smelling your tastes? See, this is the idea that explains tastes. So you enjoy seeing the clarity with which the ideas more enjoyment. But to the guy that can't do it, it's less enjoyable. You see, that's the way it is.